Welcome to the OA Light a Candle Meeting Podcast. Visit our website at www.oalaig.org, where you'll find three separate speaker feeds with over 400 speaker files and forms for ordering CDs for these speakers, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Kate.
All right, so I'm Kate. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Kate.
Oh, my gosh, it just feels so good to be up here. Thank you, Martha. She's not here, but just thank you, Martha, for asking me to speak, and thank you, all of you, for being here tonight. It's just a real privilege to be up here, and what a journey it's been. What an adventure it's been. The last 4 years and 4 months I've been in the rooms, and I just so feel my higher power standing with me right now. Should I get closer? Make out with the mic a little? There we go. Is that good? There we go. Thank you. So, I just really feel like I'm in a state of grace tonight, and that's a direct result of the step work that I've done and of the relationship I have with God tonight, and it's all thanks to this program. So, it's really a miracle that I'm here. So I guess I'll just kind of dive in. What it used to be like, and childhood and all those good things. I, like all of us, I was obsessed with food, and my life was completely unmanageable. I was reflecting earlier today, and as far back as I can remember, I was always thinking about when I was going to eat. During exercise, I was always excited after I would work out about eating. We'd go to family functions. I come from a big family, and it was always centered around food, and I was always the one just in the kitchen cleaning up, eating the food while we were cleaning. I just remember all the food growing up that we would have at every single event, and I don't even remember what we were celebrating or why we were there, but I just remember all of the different things that we ate, and just being so excited about the food, and especially at my Grandma Sally's growing up. Grandma Sally, she had treats everywhere in the house, and I remember very clearly doing these little, I would know where to go, and I would go to this candy jar, to that candy jar, and I knew where everything was hidden in the cupboard, and I still remember that so clearly. And just all my birthdays, I just remember the cakes and being so, all that stuff. But yet I was a very, very, very scrawny little kid, and people in high school or in junior high, the older girls thought that I was anorexic, and I was made fun of for how skinny I was because I blossomed really late, just junior, senior year in high school. So I was this little twig. Playing sports, I was in a lot of sports, and just, I was known as, my parents say I was a hyperactive kid, so they had me involved in everything, and so food, it wasn't an issue growing up, because I was super active, and I was super thin, and I could just eat whatever I wanted, but I'd say around 13, 14, I feel like after being in this program and doing a lot of work with God and doing the steps and really making the steps in my lifestyle, I have been able to discover that I kind of stopped developing emotionally. I feel like I was at a standstill from the age of 13, 14. Around 12, 13, I was encouraged by the women in my family to get plastic surgery. And, this was like 12, 13, 14, and there was a part of me that I didn't like, and it was encouraged. It was like, okay, well, you can change that. That's not a big deal. And that's just to give you an idea of where I come from. We would go to any lengths to be perfect in my family. We would go to any lengths to be thin, and we would go to any lengths to make you think that we had it all together and that we were perfect and that we were good enough. And, it's been so good to dig through a lot of that junk and a lot of those layers, especially the past year in recovery. I ended up to deal with, just after I did the 12 steps, just doing finding that I had more psychological issues to go through, I ended up getting, outside help to complement with the 12 steps, and that was a real gift, that's been a new season in recovery. And that's, my recovery has just been made up of so many different seasons. But back to when I was a little teenager, it was just, it's like, I had to get straight A's, and it's not like my family was even telling me I had to do these things. But I was just always driving myself so hard, and I was such a perfectionist with everything I did, and with how I looked, and I was like my mom's little doll growing up. And I mean, my gosh, I mean, she was laying out clothes for me until I left for college, like literally picking out my outfits every day. I mean, yeah, think about that. So I was like this little doll, and I didn't know how to think for myself. And a really cool part about recovery is that I've been learning how to have a voice, and I've discovered a voice, and God's been giving me the ability and the grace to, you know, to share that and to have that and to express that. But I was always basically told what to think, how to look. Just, you know, God forbid someone sees that I'm not perfect, because then they would see that I wasn't good enough. Because from the age of 12, 13, 14, I really didn't think I was good enough once my family encouraged me to get surgery. And then I ended up having multiple surgeries by the time I was 18. And you know, and like liposuction was an option. And I mean, just crazy. It's like that was the area that I came from the family that I came from. It was just we will go to any lengths to look good. And so just it's how that played out in recovery. Wow, I mean, so many layers to dig through with that. And I mean, that fed into, I mean, the eating really came on strong in high school, just around sports, because I didn't feel like I was good enough. And physically, I didn't feel good enough. I thought, well, surgery was the option. Being thin was the option. And you know, my mom was never thin enough. I God bless her, and she really did the best she could, and she did a great job. But you know, her disease and her journey with her eating and body issues really was not a healthy environment for me to be in with the way that I'm designed. I mean, I'm a perfectionist. I'm a people pleaser. So if she didn't like her arms, then oh my gosh, well, I'm double her size, then I must have really ugly arms that I can't share. And it's such a cool, it just feels so good to have my arms showing tonight, and it's just such a victory. I can't even tell you guys. It's just, I was really conscious of my choice to have my arms show tonight, because I did not show my arms. It was very hard for me to show my arms throughout college. I mean, I would always wear short sleeve shirts, long shirts. I was always in just knee-length black skirts, like long tops. And I probably wasn't that much bigger than I am now, but my head was so crazy that I didn't think my arms were good enough for anyone else to see. So what else do I want to share about that time? So high school. So I remember never feeling like a good enough, like I was a good enough athlete, and yet sports took up a lot of my time. But I just remember the focus was always on, and the relief always came when we were eating, you know, as a team, and in between tournaments. In between games and tournaments, I remember the highlight was always the food and the coolers were full of amazing snacks. And I, you know, sometimes I wouldn't play the entire day, and I was known as, you know, I'm a people pleaser, so I was known as like the good cheerleader for the team, like the good teammate. And I was always the one cheering and just encouraging everyone. But inside, I was dying inside, because I didn't feel good enough physically, because, you know, my family told me, yes, you need to get surgery, you should do that. And that was kind of just a big lie that just, because I didn't tell anyone about that in high school, and made up a whole lie around that. And just, that's another big part of my story, is being dishonest, lying, manipulating, just so that you think, you know, everything's good, everything's fine, everything's perfect. And just dying inside. But I didn't know it, though. I really didn't know it. And we didn't talk about feelings in my family, and I don't even remember crying throughout high school. It's so funny. I don't even remember crying ever. So this all just got, and granted, I am a really good people pleaser. I'm really good. And, or so I thought. And I thought I was a mind reader. And my second sponsor, I'll never forget, she looked at me, deadpan, looked in my eyes, and she's like, "Kate, you are not a mind reader." And I was pissed off at her, because I thought, no, like I can sense, you know, if you're thinking this, like I can get, like I see that, I know that. And she, and that just came from the people pleasing, because I was always that chameleon, just trying to, you know, be who I thought you wanted me to be. And I was so upset when she burst that bubble, because I really thought, I was like, no, I have a sense for people, and I get it, and I know what they're thinking. And she's like, no, you don't. Actually, no, you don't. And but that skill served me for so long, that defect, that shortcoming. I mean, it served me in a lot of ways, and I'm looking at that right now, actually, for the second time. I'm doing step six for the second time thoroughly. But at the time, I mean, that led me to being, you know, nominated on, you know, when it was, where was I? The prom queen? I mean, what? And I hated myself. And yet no one could see that. And I just had so much shame around everything. And I really just felt like a lie and the biggest fraud in high school. But no one could see that. And I was trying to be desperately who I thought you wanted me to be. And I did that pretty successfully for a few years there, because people must have liked me because I was being whoever I thought they wanted me to be. So that was just exhausting. And I didn't have a voice at all at that time. So went on to college. That again was just one big manipulation. I went to college to play a sport, and I, with the intention to quit after I got in, and that showed up on my amends list the first time around. That was terrifying to confront the coaches, but God really brought me to a great place where I was able to make amends for that. But I mean, that's how I maintained this mask of perfection that I was so desperate to always have up. I would lie and manipulate to get what I thought I wanted. So I ended up, in college, ended up getting into the Greek system and just drank a lot and ate a lot when I was drinking and dated a lot and, you know, just food, alcohol, boys. That was college right there. And tried the geographic cure a few times. I kept thinking, well, if I just live abroad in enough places, then I'll be okay. I mean, I tried everything to fill this God-shaped hole. I tried controlling my weight. I tried controlling what you thought of me. I tried dressing perfectly. I tried pleasing my parents. I tried dating the right guys. I tried driving the right car. I tried having the right job after college. I tried having the right college. I mean, I tried everything, and I was still completely empty inside, and still just had the largest God-shaped hole inside before I came into these rooms. And the cool thing about God is that He allowed me to try everything, you know? It's like God, my God is a God who, free will, baby. I mean, it's like I can do whatever I want, and I can make myself as miserable as I want to make myself. But He's always there, you know? He's always there for when I'm ready for Him. And that's what I discovered in the rooms was that, you know, God was always right there. It's just I wasn't ready to open up to Him. I wasn't ready to do life with Him. And I was trying desperately for everything. He really allowed me to try everything, because He knew that I was so sick and crazy that I needed to run out of ideas and options before I was desperate enough to turn my life over, to turn my will over, which is, I love step three, and I still work that every day. You know, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Oh, I love that decision. I get to make that throughout the day if I need to. So really was out of options at the end of college. I was checking everything off my list, everything I thought I needed, everything I thought I needed to do. You know, shoulda, coulda, doing all those things. Just crazy, just looking for validation in men and from always my mom. My mom was my higher power. I discovered that when I came into the rooms. That was horrifying. I love how I can say that so casually. My mom was my higher power. So got out of school, you know, cheated on tests to get through certain classes. It's like I did whatever it took to keep that perfect facade. And then ended up getting into a career that my dad wanted for me, because I was a mind reader, right? He didn't tell me he wanted it for me, but I thought he totally wants me to do this. I should do this. And I was miserable, and that was just everything kind of came to a head when I was in that career. My boss was struggling with an eating disorder, and it's really funny how when you're sick, you attract sick people. And she was just eating frozen yogurt, and I thought that was a really good idea. And I would steal her rice cakes, and the rice cakes would get stuck in my keyboard. And it was just, I remember that. I remember I'd be like, oh, and I was trying to get the rice cakes out of my keyboard, and she was only eating her frozen yogurt, and she was like a quarter of my size, and I thought, I'm not skinny enough, you know, I mean, it was just crazy. It was absolute insanity. And, oh, thank you, God, that my life is not like that today. But I just remember I couldn't exercise enough. I just remember thinking, because I was going late to work to make my specific exercise class and to train for the marathon. I mean, I was exercising for hours before I'd get into the office. Exercise bulimia is part of my story. And I was training for marathons. Once I quit my college sport, I started running really long distances to keep the compulsive eating off. And I just remember I could hardly hold my body up at my desk. I couldn't eat my responsibilities because I was so tired from kicking my own ass. And that's because I'd eaten too much over the weekend. So don't you know I have to exercise as much. I mean, every day I was so driven to be thin. I mean, that was the only thing that mattered, was how can I lose weight today? And then I couldn't, and that lasted for 5 days. And then on Saturday I would eat for hours. I'd wake up early and I would eat for hours and make concoctions and just get relief from the week, from trying to be perfect and from trying to lose weight every day. It was so exhausting. And I just thank you, God, for allowing me to go through that. And I have so much compassion for that girl today and that young woman who just really didn't feel good enough. I really didn't feel good enough. You know, I went back to that, the first surgery that I had, and I just thought I was deformed. You know, I just felt like an alien. And I remember being really scared of people looking me on, just front on. I remember thinking, like, okay, I'm okay on the side, okay, but if you look me dead on, like, I can't be looked, like, that's too intimate. And I remember being terrified of going on. I mean, I was a serial dater in my early 20s, just desperate for validation, desperate to fill that God-shaped hole, and I just remember being terrified of anyone actually getting to know me. So I would just drop everyone, I would drop anyone who was interested after a month. I would just get rid of them as fast as I could because I was terrified of everything that I was digging over. That I'd never shared with anyone. So what happened? I hit my first bottom. I definitely hit other bottoms in the room, but this was the biggest bottom and got me into OA. I googled binge eating and OA popped up, and that night I had a not even an epic binge, but like a pretty good binge, and it kept me up all night. You know, I was just farting, and I was like passed out by the toilet for a little bit, thinking I was going to puke, and I didn't. But I could never do bulimia. I was never able to be a bulimic. Thank you, God. By the time that probably would have, you know, felt really good. But that was always the thing. That's why I did exercise. You know, that's why I thought, okay, well then I'm going to have to work out for 3 hours tomorrow. And I just, after this one binge, I just couldn't do it that day, and I'm so grateful for that. I was not able to lace up my shoes and hit San Vicente and run to the beach and run it all off, you know, while you're like burping and you're physically, you feel deformed and twisted inside, and I wasn't able to do it that day. Thank you, God. And that freaked me out so much because I thought, okay, I'm going to get fat. Like, it's all going to show on my face today. And I would cancel all my social plans. And, I mean, it was just that fear of other people seeing what I was doing to myself. So I went to a meeting that night after OA popped up on my Google. So grateful for technology. And I heard exactly what I needed to hear that night. And that, I mean, from that meeting on, the girl, I mean, God was so generous, because if that meeting hadn't hooked me, I don't think I would have come back into the room. I mean, it would have been a long time. But the person, the girl who shared, that's why I'm so eager and happy and grateful to be up here sharing with you guys, because I don't know who's going to hear this when they download the podcast. And the podcast has saved my butt so many times when I've been in my travels and when I've lived in places where there aren't enough meetings. I was listening to a podcast today just as I was getting ready. I just love this service. So thank you, everyone, who makes this possible each week. But this girl who was being of service that night and was leading, that story got me in the rooms and showed me that there was a different way. I didn't know I had options. And that's what this program, that's what the steps have given me. They've given me a different way of living. And my life doesn't have to be unmanageable, you know? I don't have to make decisions each day that make everything about the day feel so unmanageable. I didn't know that before. So when I heard her share, I started going to as many meetings as I possibly could, and I would hide in the back, I would go in late and all that stuff, wear a big hat, wear a big sweatshirt, it was so overwhelming to hear all these feelings that I felt for so many years, expressed by others and articulated so beautifully, and it was foreign to me. I didn't know I had even had those feelings going on. I mean, I certainly couldn't have put words to them. And when everyone else was just being so rigorously honest, it was so intoxicating. And I got such a high off of the meetings I went to and found the all women's meetings to be really safe for me initially. And still do, you know, it's yeah, there's nothing quite like a room when the lights are dim and it's all women and you're just sharing from the heart. Wow. I mean, that's in all of our meetings. I mean, all of our meetings, God shows up. God's always showing up. God's always there. So yes, I started going to meetings. I got a sponsor probably after, I don't know, a month and a half. And I just heard, pick someone who has what you want. And this girl, she was confident, she was comfortable in her skin, she was totally imperfect, and I wanted that. She looked really comfortable with being imperfect, and that's what I want. That's what I wanted, and that's what I still want. And we ended up doing the first three steps together, and then I felt so funny, it was part of my recovery, but so early on, I ended up moving abroad to go to graduate school, and went to this country, Far East, and everything was shooken up, and I was desperate to be well, and I was desperate to jump into the program over there, but yeah, and I'm still reflecting with God just on, it doesn't even matter, but just on kind of what led me over there. I really believe it was God, but I think it was also, a part of it was just being desperate to escape, because at the time, I could not get well the way that I needed to. Being just with all the demands I felt my family and my friends had on me at the time, I didn't know this was going on, but I had so many people in my life that I felt obligated to and that I felt had expectations. I've gone into another program for that, but at the time, I just me being so extreme, you know, being the marathoner, or moving to different countries when I felt uncomfortable around someone. I mean, I am so extreme by nature. And I don't know if you guys can relate to that, but I was like, I'm either going to eat perfectly or I'm going to eat everything. I'm either going to restrict or I'm going to eat everything. I'm going to have, you know, a piece of fruit for dinner, or I'm going to have everything. And this was one of the cases. After 4 months in recovery, I moved to the Far East. I mean, it was flipping crazy. And but God so used it and so worked through it, and it was so ordained and so blessed. And my recovery really took off over there, because I was desperate for more recovery. I ended up getting a sponsor over there. I remember I had my big book as I was taking off to fly over there. I didn't know when I would be returning. I had so much peace because of the higher power that I found in just working the first three steps. And I had my big book clutched to my chest in the plane, and I read that on the way over. And I just really fell in love with the big book and with the steps. And that has been that the big book, my recovery is rooted in the big book. And why I have what I have today is because it is rooted in the big book. And the way the big book has supported the steps. I mean, that, my recovery, that's the foundation of my recovery. And it's so cool how God led me to this sponsor over there. I was going to meetings for all addictions and open AA meetings and just whatever I could get into. There was no OA meeting. And ended up meeting this woman. She had just moved over there a few months after I did. We ended up starting an OA meeting. And she's just by how she would show up and lead, and well, I wanted to say lead, but she was such a great servant leader. I just, her example, her recovery was so rooted in the big book, so strong, and she was so good at doing what she said she was going to do and at showing up and was so willing to be of service, that was such a God-given example for me. And she was so willing to be my sponsor, and it's so much, she had so much time to give me, because she was out of her, she was far away from her home country, and it was just such a blessing. And we worked the heck out of this program. I was over there for just under a year and a half, and it was really all about recovery for me, and about my relationship with God, and about my master's program. But I was really in this special little incubator of just, I mean, I had hours to do step work each day, and I would spend hours doing it, and I took her direction, and that was, today I'm able, you know, 4+ years in program, I have a relationship with a higher power where I know his voice most of the time, and I'm able to execute his will, and sometimes I choose not to, but it's most of the time I'm willing to, totally and perfectly, but I'm willing to because of the willingness that I had to listen to my sponsor's direction in my early days. And she really, and that was a great season, and I became quite dependent on her, actually. And she, I want to say, broke up with me after about 2 years once I moved back to the States, and I had so much peace around it because I knew that it was time for me to really rely on God full time. of course, I got an interim sponsor right away, and then that led to another sponsor-sponsor relationship. But I had a shift in my heart. I just knew that the way I'd been working it with her, it worked until it stopped working, and then it was time to really kick into high gear with my relationship with God. But I'm so grateful for the time. I can't, for all the newcomers and for those who don't have a sponsor, just that made such a big impact on me, because she loved me unconditionally when I was not capable of liking myself. And she told me, she said, "I will love you until you love yourself," and that I would always cry when she said that. And she was able to show up for me with unconditional love. I mean, she was very tough, though, very tough love, and I needed that at the time. That kind of sponsorship would not work for me now. But at the time, that was exactly what I needed, and God really delivered that. You know, He always meets our needs. That's what I found in the rooms, is that God has always met all of my needs. Not my wants, but He's always met my needs. But yeah, so when I ended up linking up with this sponsor, she had me start back at step one, and I was so resentful at the time, because I'd already worked, don't you know, I've already worked the first three steps in America. And she said, no, I want you to start back over with me. And I'm so grateful she did that, because I was really able to have her know me on that intimate level. And it was really important for us to start fresh. And wow, and to make that the bedrock and the foundation of all the steps to come after. I love the order of the steps. I have such a profound respect for the steps, and they have become a way of life for me. And I keep a big book at my desk at work now, and I get on my knees. I stop and pause. I will read page 86 throughout the day, 86 to 88. I will read page 68 about fear when I need to. I mean, I like to have a big book on me. I always have one in my car. You know, I just love this way of life that we have. We get to get a little healthier each day if we choose to. And it's absolutely a program of spiritual progress, not spiritual perfection. And I'm so grateful for that. I was so grateful to hear that when I came into the room. So, you know, this is about spiritual progress, not perfection. You know, let go, let God. I love our slogans in here. You know, easy does it. Easy does it. And keep it simple. Keep it simple. These are slogans I use every day. But so back to my sponsor, she had me start over step one. Starting step four with her was really scary, because there were secrets that I did not think anyone would ever hear from me. And it was tough. Now I look back and I just have so much compassion for that little high schooler, for that junior higher, for that young woman who just was just eating over all these secrets. I mean, I was so scared of anyone hearing these things, because I thought, they're going to know I'm not perfect. They're going to know I'm not good enough. You know, that was my biggest fear. People seeing that I wasn't good enough, and really believing at my core that I wasn't. And after doing step five with her, and one thing for me, it's really important to have sponsors that I can be rigorously honest with, who feel very safe, and where there is a foundation of trust. And that's what I had with her, and she was rigorously honest with me, and communicated with me, and made it a safe place. And that was really important, so that I could be fearless and thorough on my moral inventory. When I did step five with her, I mean, that went on for hours. We broke it up into two different sections. You know, step five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. That was so healing for me. And she just looked at me in the eyes the entire time, and she just had so much love and compassion in her eyes. There was no judgment. And that was so unfathomable to me when I was telling her these terrible things that I'd done that no one should know. And she was just looking at me like, "I love you. I love you. I got you." And we prayed before and we prayed after, and it was a really special experience. I have to say, I didn't feel good after, because my head was telling me, you're bad, you know, and that I wasn't expecting that. She wasn't either, because that had not been her experience when she had done step five. But for me, my head, the disease came up loud and was really beating me up after I did that, which I don't think that's the experience of many, but I think it's important for me to share that, you know, we all don't feel elated and joyful after we do step five. And I had to really, you know, look at with her what my assets were, because I'd been so focused on my defects. So it's important to look at my assets after that, and to really let God, thank you, and to really let God just love on me, you know, just love on me. So yeah, so made step seven, Step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Step seven, humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. Ooh, that was just a relief. It feels good to be known, you know, by our sponsors when they help us to see what these defects of character are. It feels good to be known and to be loved and accepted, and just to know, you know, what we struggle with, and then we get to really rely on God. The more I know myself in the rooms, as the more layers that come off, I get even closer with God, and I just get to be more self-aware and then more reliant upon Him. You know, okay, God, wow, that's coming up. Okay, please help. Please make me willing to let you help with that. Step eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Oh my gosh, making the amends, that, some of those were, so, as I mentioned earlier, so challenging, but freedom. Freedom. I mean, that's the word that comes to mind. Just when I hear 12 steps, I just think freedom. I mean, God, the way these steps are laid out, they're just so divinely inspired to me, and the big book is so divinely inspired. And freedom. I mean, I just experienced so much freedom when I'm close to God and when I'm working the steps. And I had my freedom just continued to increase as I made my amends. I love working step 10. I usually do it well. Kind of do it just on the spot. I mean, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. I mean, I just promptly admitted it. I mean, I'm quick to, God just shows me after all the step work I've done, because I worked the heck out of this program, action, action, and more action. And I now have the muscles where I'm able to see, okay, that defect just came up. God, do I need to make amends there? Yes. I'll do a quick little step four in my head, and then I'll see, okay, I'll amends, and I'll make them on the spot. And that's such a gift of you know, working a strong program. I love step 11, you know, thought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him. And that's something I just do throughout the day. I'm always talking to God. And I did not have a relationship with God when I came into the room. I grew up going to church with my family, but I had no intimate, personal relationship with God. I would just say a few memorized prayers. So the fact that I have this power that's greater than me, that I can talk to all day long, and that I start, every morning I start on my knees, thanking Him for my abstinence, thanking Him for the new day, and just asking Him to be with me, I love that. I mean, it's a constant best friend. And I no longer need a person in my life to fill that. I no longer need the food to fill that. And I'm telling you, I just love the steps, and I love how it brings us into relationship with a power that works for us, and that is personal, and that is intimate, and that meets all of our needs. We get to design that power. I mean, it's really extraordinary. And I continue to need to do that, especially with the work project I have going on today. God, please, what is your will for me today? You know, what is the next right action? What is the next right step? Give me the power to carry that out. And I love in the big book, 86 to 88, you know, it encourages us to practice pausing throughout the day. You know, when agitated or doubtful, we pause. And I love that. I mean, I always say, okay, God, what's your will? Thy will, not mine, be done. And what's the next step? And I use that constantly throughout my life today, especially when I'm in the office, when I get overwhelmed. It's like, God's got the next step. It's always simple. It's always gentle. It's always loving. God's always just, His way is always gentle and simple and loving. And in step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to others and to practice these principles in all our affairs. This step, it's been such a privilege to get to pass the message on, and God has given me opportunities to do that with strangers, with family members, with close friends, with friends of friends, with people in different countries. From all walks of life, I've been able to work the steps with people. I've been able to share what I believe is God's redemption. I mean, God has totally transformed me through these 12 steps, and He's given me a character, or rather, He's kind of taken off all the layers that were hiding my true character, you know, who I really am in Him. And that's what the 12 steps have been for me. It's been about bringing me into relationship with a God that loves me unconditionally, and I've been able to have a relationship with myself, you know, as a result of working the 12 steps and continually working them. And I really take good care of myself today. my back has been out. My back was out a few months ago. Had a car accident, and my back went out, and I've really had to rely on God. I've not been able to exercise, and I can't even imagine what this would have done to me in the past. It would have been an absolute nutcase. And I have been able to, my food has stayed the same. It's probably even gotten smaller just because I need less. And I'm so in tune with my body today that I, most days, you know, imperfectly, I'm able to stop when I'm full, because I always bring God into my meals. And it's, you know, work has felt a little unmanageable at times, and that's when I pull up the big book. That's when I get on my knees. That's when I call a fellow. And I work the program in my life by, I call my sponsor daily. I do that imperfectly, but I call my sponsor. I'm always in contact with fellows. It's very rare that a day goes by where I don't speak with someone from program. I've got a God Squad in program. Women that I'm, I want to say fiercely close to, women that know me and that know all the quote-unquote just icky parts or parts that I find just not so great. Or I almost said ugly, but I was like, no, I accept all those parts today, you know? And I have women that know all those parts and that can reflect back truth when my head is spinning. I mean, for today, I have to say, I mean, my life is so good today, and I can see the blessings, and I can see what God has done, and I'm aware of how God's working in my life, and that I'm so grateful for that. I have so much more that I'd love to share, but I don't know how much time we have, but a few questions. Let's open it up to questions, please. Abstinence and food plan. Yes. Thank you. My abstinence for me, it's no binging, and it's no exercise bulimia. And my food plan has changed, and I think it will continue to evolve and change in recovery. Just as my program and the way I work, it continues to evolve. God keeps reminding me just to have this space to let everything just evolve. You know, nothing is going to stay the same. Everything is just always changing, my relationship with Him, with myself. So food for me today, it's three meals, two snacks. Sometimes three meals, one snack. Sometimes it's five little meals. So kind of just, it's always the same amount of food, and I prepare food. Usually I prepare food for the entire day in the morning or the night before. I take it to work, and I'm at work so long these days that I'll have all my meals there. So it's kind of just whatever I have time for in between calls and meetings. I'll just, okay, God, is it time? Do I need protein? What do I need? And I'm always asking Him, okay, what should I have right now? And allowing Him to just dictate how much I serve myself. So it's, yeah, so, and when I eat out, last night I was out with friends, and I had half of what was on my plate. And in the past I would have eaten, I know I love what I ordered at this place, and I used to just, you know, just crush it. And last night, halfway through, I was like, oh, that's weird. I think I'm done. Excellent. You know, and that's like God's grace. And so I had the other half of lunch today. I did not understand the concept of that, not crushing your plate, and having food after. I mean, I used to have meals after meals after meals, you know? So abstinence for me today, it's just keeping clean. It's like sober, clean living. In my relationships, in my food, my relationship with caffeine. God lifted coffee off of me about, gosh, almost 2 years ago. I was totally obsessed with coffee, and I would have it throughout the day, totally compulsive and addicted to it. And for today, I don't even have coffee. I mean, it's like the road gets narrower and narrower, and God just keeps lifting desires and obsessions and compulsions, and just gives me new levels of willingness to just let go of things so I can have more freedom in Him, you know? Can I answer your question? Cool. Oh, that's all. Thank you.